Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, DMV? How's everybody doing today? 106.7 The Fan is on your AM FM dial. It's on the radio.com app. It's also on our stream at thefandc.com. And however you're tuned in today, well, we appreciate you hanging out with us for just a little bit. My name is Danny Noakes. Our guy Darius here producing the show. It's a really fun day to be doing radio here at 106.7 The Fan in the great city of Washington, D.C. Goodness gracious, we've been busy today, haven't we? Really enjoyed listening to Ashu and Lavero on my way up from Richmond this morning. They did a great job. From over there at Nats Park, Nats Winterfest ongoing the next couple of days. They're right up the street here. And then, of course, the Rooster, Chris Russell. He was also out at Nats Park. Had a bunch of really good interviews. Darius, I assume that our invitations just got lost in the mail or right?
Yeah, they missed us.
I don't know what's going on. We're the only show today that's not broadcasting from Nats Park. What the heck's up with that?
Not sure. We can take that up with the money maker there.
That's right. And we're both wearing national shirts right now. We're decked out. We're ready to go. Okay. We won't hold that against anybody, right? Now, Virginia Tech men's basketball, by the way, victorious over NC State a few minutes ago. Proud alumnus moment. Big win for head coach Mike Young, who a lot of Hokies fans, let's face it, they didn't like that hire after Buzz Williams departed last offseason, but the Hokies get their third ACC win of the season. They needed it. We are with you up until 6:45. We're bridging the gap between Virginia Tech men's basketball and Washington Capitals hockey. And at 6:45 is when we hand things off to the voice of the Washington Capitals, John Walton, and the rest of the Caps radio crew, Washington, over at the Verizon Center anymore. Capital One Arena. It's still tough to get used to every now and then with the couple of times that that's changed recently. But they host the New Jersey Devils, do the Caps. We're looking forward to that. Not to mention the NFL playoffs are underway, and the first game of today is also underway. The Minnesota Vikings visiting the San Francisco 49ers. No score yet, just under 12 minutes to go in the first quarter. Garoppolo completing a pass inside the 20 for a first down. The Niners are driving. We will keep you updated on that game here over the next 2 hours, just a little bit over 2 hours. But if at any point you want to jump in on the phones, you can do so. The number to call is 800-636-1067. You can also get at me on Twitter. I'm at Danny Noakes. You can tweet the station at 106.7 The Fan as well. We're going to jump into an interview with our first guest, RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage here in a little over 5 minutes from now. That's kind of where we will start. However, there's a lot going on with the NFL playoffs right now. The Niners, the Vikings, they are in action as we speak. We also have the Tennessee Titans at the Baltimore Ravens, which is a little bit more of a local flavor for you if you just decided to renounce the Redskins and then go and root for the Ravens, like I know some people around here have done. Not me. Don't look at me. I know there's some of you out there, though. Don't try and hide. That's an 8:15 kickoff, though, and I am looking forward to it. I think Mike Vrabel's done a great job there in Tennessee, and I think they're going to give Baltimore all they can handle today. I don't see the Titans getting a win, an upset, over the Ravens at M&T Bank Stadium, but we'll see how it goes down. And then you got two more games tomorrow. Houston is at the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a 3:05 kickoff. And then the Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers. So you got all that going on. And, man, this is one of the last weekends where we're mostly guaranteed to see a really good football game, right? I mean, sometimes when you get to the championship weekend, which is coming up just next weekend, some of those games aren't as competitive. The Super Bowl has let us down a few times, although the last, not last year included, but we have seen a lot of really good Super Bowls as of late, very competitive ones. Philadelphia, New England, Seattle was obviously a lot of fun, and there have been many more as of late as well. But we don't have a ton of time as we're coming out of the Virginia Tech men's basketball broadcast. We're going to get ready for our first break. But before I do, we do get to that break, here's a quick scoreboard update. The San Francisco 49ers are on the board. 8-play, 61-yard scoring drive right out of the chute. 4 minutes, 11 seconds. Kyle Shanahan's boys are on the board with a 6-0 lead. Garoppolo with what looks like about a 3-yard touchdown pass. Again, we'll keep you updated on that throughout today's show. RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage, joins us next. We'll do a little Nats and see what's going on in free agency. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Niners out to a 7-0 lead over the Minnesota Vikings. 9 minutes, 30 seconds to go in the first quarter. Niners kicking it to Minnesota for the Vikings' first offensive possession. So it's the first time you'll see Kirk Cousins out on the field. That 3-yard touchdown pass by Jimmy Garoppolo to Kendrick Bourne. And it's 7-0 San Francisco. We switch gears now as we go to Major League Baseball and as we go to the phones to welcome in our first guest. Let's give a warm welcome to our friend RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. You can find him on Twitter at @R_J_Anderson. RJ, what's happening, buddy? Good to hear from you, man.
Absolutely. Nice talking to you as well.
So have you been outside at all today walking around Washington, D.C.? As I'm coming into the studio, I'm seeing it's just absolutely bustling here down on Half Street. You've got Nats Winterfest going on. Everybody wants to enjoy the weather, but there's a buzz about it with everything going on post-World Series.
Yeah, I haven't been down to Winterfest today, but I've been outside, and it doesn't really feel like January, does it?
No, it feels like spring. It feels like we're getting ready for baseball season, and we are getting ready for baseball season with spring training a little over a month away. Still some time to be relaxed for these players, as I know they really cherish that offseason time. But, RJ, some free agency stuff here to get to, and before we get into the Nats stuff, I want to look at some of the bigger headlines across the majors, starting with Mookie Betts, the Boston Red Sox. They got a one-year deal done to avoid arbitration, $27 million, the most money a player has ever made to avoid arbitration. Broke Nolan Arenado's record from last year at $26 million. Arenado ends up getting an eight-year, $260 million deal in 2019 with Colorado. So what did Mookie Betts' deal do to increase his chances of staying with Boston?
Honestly, I'm not sure it did much of anything to increase his chances of staying there because Boston is in a situation now where they're looking to get underneath the luxury tax line, and that could entail trading Betts later this winter. Now, you know, do I think that's likely? Probably not. I think it's a little bit more likely that they ship out David Price, Jackie Bradley Jr., and some of the other veterans there. But you can't roll it out until they actually make those moves. And remember that Boston fired Dave Dombrowski, hired Haim Bloom from the Tampa Bay Rays, and, you know, they've made all these mentions of getting underneath that line. So, you know, keep an open mind about what Boston's going to do the rest of the way, but I don't think that this necessarily suggests that Betts is going to be there beyond the season, if he's even there this season.
It's an interesting situation there, and you also wonder if Major League Baseball will come down on them with any sanctions with what their manager, Alex Cora, has been involved in with the sign-stealing epidemic. More on that here in a second, RJ, but in similar fashion, the Los Angeles Dodgers and Cody Bellinger also got a deal done, $11.5 million to also avoid arbitration, but that sure is an upgrade for Bellinger, the reigning National League MVP, where he made shy of $1 million last year. But like Mookie, how does this deal kind of set the table for what's to come in LA for Bellinger and the Dodgers?
Yeah, well, he's years and years away from free agency, so it's not as dire a situation as it is with Betts, who will qualify for free agency after the season, but keep an eye actually on the Dodgers as it pertains to Betts, because, you know, they have enough wiggle room between themselves and that luxury tax line to go out there and trade for a star-level contributor, be it Betts, be it Nolan Arenado, be it, you know, Francisco Lindor and Mike Clevenger, you know, whoever else you want to throw out there who's reportedly on the trading block. So, you know, this isn't really having anything to do with Bellinger's future there. He's going to be a Dodger for at least a couple more years, and we'll go from there. But, you know, there's really no reason for teams like Boston and Los Angeles or even Chicago with Chris Bryant to be, you know, pretending they're broke instead of just giving these guys long-term deals and keeping them around.
RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage is with us. If you'd like, you can find him on Twitter at @R_J_Anderson. Now we can move on to the Nats here, RJ. And at the top of their free agency wish list is still Josh Donaldson. And Donaldson has yet to make a decision. We know that both Washington and Atlanta, his former, possibly current ball club, have each offered similar four-year, $100 million deals somewhere in that range. What do you think is taking him so long to make this decision? You kind of get the feeling here in Washington, D.C. that the Nats are losing their grip a little bit on him.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I actually asked one of my front office sources, you know, what's taking Donaldson so long? Is there something we don't know about going on? And, you know, they replied they actually didn't know it was taking him so long. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem like anyone has a good feel for that. And, you know, the Minnesota Twins are also said to be involved there, so maybe they're making a late charge or something. I don't really know. With regards to the Nationals, it does seem like maybe they pivoted a little bit because of their other moves the past couple weeks. And, you know, I'm sure Rizzo still has some salary, you know, some budget space earmarked for Donaldson if he decides, hey, I want to be part of DC's attempt at, you know, winning a second consecutive title or what have you. But it does seem like maybe they've shifted gears a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see what the Nationals do at third base if they don't land Donaldson, because there really aren't a ton of great options out there. I'm not sure they have the means to go out and trade for Chris Bryant. And, you know, once you get past Bryant and you assume Arenado is too rich for their blood, then you're talking about maybe some former Nationals in trades like Sheldon Neuse or Kelvin Gutierrez, maybe a Matt Duffy type, a Todd Frazier type. I don't know. Maybe they just stay internal. I really don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, though, if Rizzo has to fall to plan C at third base.
Yeah, it's very interesting, RJ, and that was my follow-up question. What would be some of the Nationals' options if they don't get this deal done with Josh Donaldson? Chris Bryant has recently got a one-year deal done with Chicago, but kind of like your sentiments with Mookie Betts and the Boston Red Sox, I wouldn't expect that to necessarily mean that Chris Bryant is solidly a Cub for life. Far from it, as a matter of fact. But I think one of the good things that the Nationals, and specifically Mike Rizzo, their general manager, have done this offseason are sign guys to play the infield like a Starlin Castro and Eric Thames, who can move around a little bit. They can play multiple positions. And if you have injuries, which you would certainly expect are going to happen here coming up in 2020, you can shuffle some guys around and figure out what works best.
Yeah, they also have Cabrera and Kendrick coming back.
Right.
But, you know, with regards to Bryant, his situation is actually even more complicated than Betts, because he has this pending grievance against the Cubs as it pertains to service time manipulation. And basically, he missed being a free agent next winter by a day. So, you know, a panel is still deciding what exactly is going to come of that. No one I've talked to expects Bryant to win that case and to have his free agency moved up a year. But right now, if you're the Cubs or a team interested in trading for Bryant, it's kind of hard to get a deal done. Kind of hard to, you know, put a value on him when his remaining team control could be slashed in half at a whim. So that's a complicated situation, a messy situation, and hopefully we get a resolution soon, because I'm sure he'd like to know where he'll be playing this upcoming season.
All right, pal, here's my last one for you. I mentioned this sign-stealing epidemic that's going on here in Major League Baseball. I'm wondering what kind of discipline that we could expect to be handed down to both the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox. Those are the two teams. Before the Nationals won, they were the last two reigning World Series champions, and they were each embroiled in this issue with the sign stealing. So what else is going to happen here, and how soon do you think we could expect a ruling from Rob Manfred or Major League Baseball?
You know, I have to assume they're going to want to get this out of the way before the season starts, mm-hmm. and maybe even before spring training begins. So I would expect maybe sometime over the next month or so we would hear something. In terms of the exact, you know, parameters of the punishment or whatever, I think you're going to see Manfred probably use a combination of a fine, perhaps stripping them of draft picks and or dropping their position in the draft, and perhaps even a suspension. I mean, you know, is it out of the question that he suspends someone's general manager for a month, or maybe the manager for a month? I don't think so, based on past precedent. And remember, we're not that far removed from him actually banning a general manager from baseball for circumventing the international free agent rules. So maybe that's even in play. I don't really know. I don't have a good feel for that. But I do think you're going to see somewhat harsh penalties imposed. Whether it's enough to deter other teams from doing it, that's beyond me. But we'll see.
RJ, I appreciate the time, man. The analysis spot on, as always. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, my man, and we will catch up again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You got it. That's RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. One more time, if you'd like, give him a follow on Twitter, at @R_J_Anderson. A lot of good stuff right there on all the topics that we brought up. You wonder what is, in fact, taking Josh Donaldson so long to make this decision between, if it is the Braves and the Nationals and the Twins. Well, I feel like you really know what you're getting between all of those teams. He played in Atlanta last year. The Nationals are the reigning World Series champions, but if you... And ask Bryce Harper, if you leave from one division team to go to a division rival, you're going to have one fan base that's pretty fired up at you. Not that these players necessarily should care too much about that. They should do what's best for themselves and what's best for their families and their future and yada, yada, yada. But it seems like it's a pretty simple decision to be made. But again, when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, I understand him wanting to take as much time as possible to put himself in the best position as possible to do well for the rest of his career. He is a former American League MVP and can clearly help out the Nats in the infield. He is the best glove that's still on the market and would also give them some power. All right, that's going to do it here for our shortened 4 o'clock hour. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, more National Football League. I'll give you an update on the divisional game between the Minnesota Vikings and the San Francisco 49ers. And we'll continue our discussion on the Washington Nationals. Next, don't go anywhere. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. My gosh, I swear it is June 11th, 2020, not January 11th, 2020. It's 70 degrees outside, Darius, and we have Jimmy Buffett ads that are airing on the station already? Are you kidding me? Hey, I love the warm weather. I'm ready for more Nats baseball. But man, let's not shave off months. They're already years are flying by already. I can't even keep up with it. How are we doing, everybody? 106.7 The Fan on your AM/FM dial. It's on the radio.com app, on the stream, thefandc.com. I'm Danny Noakes. Darius is producing the show. 800-636-1067 is the Mattress Warehouse hotline if you want to jump in on the conversation. I'm on Twitter, at Danny Noakes. You could tweet the station as well, at 1067TheFan. Thanks to RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage for joining us. In the most recent segment, we have a scoreboard update from the NFC Divisional Playoffs. A minute 18 to go in the first quarter. The Minnesota Vikings all tied up with the San Francisco 49ers, 7 points apiece. The Vikings tied things up with a 41-yard touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins to Stephon Diggs, a deadly duo they have been this season. Diggs is a great wide receiver, and hey, Kirk Cousins is continuing his, well, I guess you could call it a hot streak, winning over the New Orleans Saints last week to get his first career playoff win, and now all tied up as we near the end of the first quarter between the Niners and the Vikings. The winner moves on to the NFC Championship. Obviously, they will play the winner of the Seattle-Green Bay game, which is not until tomorrow. That'll be a 6:40 kickoff, the second of the two games that kicks off tomorrow. Houston at Kansas City kicks off at 3:05 on Sunday afternoon. And later tonight, you have the Tennessee Titans and the Baltimore Ravens going head-to-head. 800-636-1067. Grab a line as we move back into discussing the Washington Nationals. And I didn't want to move back off the Nats just yet because we do have Nats Winterfest going on. It's easy to see, especially just coming here to the station today. In Washington, D.C., everybody is out and about enjoying the beautiful weather, and you definitely should. It's not something that you see on January 11th most years, but we have it, so it's great to see people making the most of it. But Nats Winterfest, it's a little bit of a different buzz this year, and listening to Ashu and Lavero and Chris Russell earlier today, you hear the interviews that these guys are doing with guys like Mike Rizzo, also Victor Robles and Steven Strasburg and many other great guests. Trey Turner was also out there. I saw that there was media availability with Sean Doolittle and Max Scherzer. It felt like after the Nationals won the World Series that we really had to table the celebration for a little bit, and that was because free agency was imminent, and certainly for guys like Mike Rizzo, the general manager, you had a lot of tough decisions to make, and especially those involving Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon. Now, I think that Rizzo and the Nationals have had yet another really good offseason, all things considered, and we'll start with the big loss, and that would be Anthony Rendon, and it is a tremendous loss. There's no way around that, and you can certainly criticize the Lerner family if you'd like. That's not what I'm here to do right now. Obviously, Rendon, a silver slugger, he's a gold glove caliber player and all-star, and the Nats don't win the 2019 World Series without him. Despite his departure, because of what he did and how his career in D.C. ended, however, Anthony Rendon is going to be a Washington National forever, no matter where he ends his career, whether that is in Anaheim with the Angels where he'll play the 2020 season and beyond, or whether it's somewhere else if he ends up getting traded for whatever reason or what have you. I can't see into the future. Rendon will always be a National. But all the other moves that Mike Rizzo has been making, I think, have been tremendous so far, and they really go to show what type of general manager is, and obviously the type of franchise that the Nationals are in the way that they like to build their team. It's not really a different formula than the one that they've used for the last few years. If you listen to Rizzo and the interview that he did with Ashu and Levero today, he talked about how 2012, 2014, 2016, right? The years that the Nationals won the division, they felt like they had as good a shot as ever to go win the World Series. Obviously, it didn't happen that way, and there were some improvements that needed to be made. But it's not as though the Nationals went into 2019, the year that they would win the World Series, with a vastly different formula. And I think all of us have to admit, maybe there's some of you out there that didn't, and I didn't necessarily want Davey Martinez or Mike Rizzo to lose their jobs at that 19-31 start back in May of 2019. You don't, especially in this business, calling for someone's job, I guess, unless it's Bruce Allen. And we'll get to that in a second. Bruce Allen exiting D.C., that is obviously a fun topic to get to. But with Rizzo and Davey, you looked at the way that the Nationals were playing last year. There was a lack of fundamentals, which you would imagine falls on the manager. But then the bullpen was the worst in Major League Baseball. Well, that's a roster construction issue. So both Rizzo and Davey would have been shouldering the blame if they hadn't straightened the ship. They did, though, and that's where things changed, obviously. And they had the team good enough, constructed well enough to go and win that World Series. So coming into 2020 and throughout this offseason, you get Howie Kendrick back. Not an everyday player, but boy, has he been tremendous when playing the last couple of years. Obviously, a big couple of home runs, not just in the World Series, but also the massive grand slam in the divisional series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Howie Kendrick also seems to be a part of the foundation of the current clubhouse, and that cannot be overlooked. Now, you also have a couple of new guys that are going to be playing in the Nationals infield this season, Starlin Castro and Eric Thames. Castro, ideally, will play second, but he can play third if the Nats need him to. Now, he hit 270 last year with a career-high 86 RBIs, which I would say is pretty darn good considering he was playing for the Miami Marlins. So you've got a good player there in Castro, and then Thames hit 25 bombs last season. He gives you the production that Matt Adams gave you last year, and then some. Plus, all we've heard about is how excited Thames is to be joining the Nationals. He was incredibly excited. It was an easy decision for him to make. At least that's what we're reading in these articles that are being written about him when he came to Washington, D.C. That's a good thing. It can only be a good thing when you've got a guy that has never played here before but is incredibly excited. He's motivated to come and be a part of this franchise. Before we get there, Asdrubal Cabrera also coming back. He can play multiple infield spots. He came up big a number of times last year, especially towards the back half of the season. You still have the potential of adding Ryan Zimmerman, re-signing him rather, and then you have the moves in the bullpen. When the Nationals went and got Will Harris for 3 years, $24 million, it kind of seemed like they were using him or re-signing him or signing him, rather, instead of re-signing Daniel Hudson. There we go. But it didn't come to be that way because they also were able to bring Daniel Hudson back. Not to mention Tanner Rainey, Wander Suero, Hunter Strickland, and Roenis Elias. Tough to say his name with all of those syllables sometimes. You want to pronounce it correctly, but the last two of which spent a lot of time injured and weren't really able to contribute to the Nationals World Series run, that bullpen actually looks pretty strong going into 2020. And that is not something that you would have expected to say even going into the 2019 postseason. I mean, whether it was Milwaukee, L.A., St. Louis, Houston, that Nationals bullpen was always going to be something that concerned you and something that gave you a little bit of uneasiness. But in a nutshell, the Nationals have done well to acquire guys, and I said this to RJ Anderson last segment, they've acquired guys in the infield that can play a couple of different positions. So you give Davey Martinez, your manager, a couple of options in the event that there is an injury, which over 162 games is likely to happen a few times. So Mike Rizzo doing a great job as he has as long as he's been the Washington Nationals general manager. He does deserve a ton of credit. And I think the Lerner family, the way that this organization is constructed right now, they're just trying to go and get more championships. That window is as wide open as it's likely ever going to be in the foreseeable future. And the Nationals have been competitive on a major league level now for 7-8 years, right? Going back to the first time they won the division in 2012. And now that they've got that World Series championship, they've got the playoff series win, they got a wild card win this past, this run gave them all of the confidence that they needed. So as we get ready to start the 2020 season with spring training beginning, I believe, on February 22nd, I think pitchers and catchers report a little bit before that, but the Nationals' first game is on the 22nd. Could be wrong. I know it's later in February. But as we get ready for that, the Nationals are certainly going to be one of the favorites coming out of the National League with their strength of pitching and obviously the position players that they have. But now I think they have that confidence. And coming out of the 2018 offseason where you lose Bryce Harper, my first thought was, well, maybe they play looser now that they don't have a guy like Bryce in the clubhouse. Not that he was toxic to the clubhouse or that people in the clubhouse didn't like him, but when there's a guy that you know is going to command that much money and attention, it kind of sucks the air out of the room. And the Nationals no longer have to worry about that with Harper. And even with Anthony Rendon, a very similar situation as well. Although I know they would have loved to have Anthony Rendon back. That situation very different than that of the Bryce Harper saga last year. So encouraging times to be a Nationals fan. Nats Winterfest day one, successful. I believe Chris Russell and Tom Lavero are going to be out at Nationals Park tomorrow morning for Nats Winterfest day two. Again, where was our invite today, Darius? I don't know. We're the only guys that weren't doing the show from Nats Park today. But again, we're not holding it against anybody. I'll give you another quick update on the Vikings-Niners game. On the other side of the break, we've got NFL to discuss. We got Washington Redskins to discuss. And at 5:45, Washington Capitals host the New Jersey Devils tonight. We'll talk about it with Jordan Bonder on Caps Reporter for our sister station 910 The Fan in Richmond. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Well, we've moved into the second quarter of the first of two divisional games, the National Football League, this evening. Still all tied at 7 points apiece, San Francisco hosting Minnesota. 12:45 to go, second quarter. We're monitoring that. And remember, more NFL football coming up later on. You've got the Titans at the Ravens at 8:15, and then two more games tomorrow. Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs, 3:05 kickoff, and the Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers. That is a 6:40 kickoff. 800-636-1067. I'm Danny Noakes. Darius producing the show. Get at me on Twitter if you want to jump in. At Danny Noakes, the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. I gave it to you. Here it is one more time. 800-636-1067. I'm going to talk a little Redskins here this segment. And coming up at 5:45, we'll pivot to the Washington Capitals as they host the New Jersey Devils tonight over at Capital One Arena, not Verizon Center, Capital One Arena. Got to get that right. Some people, and again, I muffed that up in the first couple of segments there, but I know that's still an adjustment to make for a lot of us. But I wanted to talk Redskins here because haven't had the chance to do so since Ron Rivera became the head coach of the Washington football franchise here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, the last time I was here, I said, if Bruce Allen gets let go, 2019 couldn't be considered a complete wash. Getting him out of the building was incredibly crucial to the future of the franchise. Yes, Dan is still there, and therefore the Redskins will still essentially have one hand tied behind their back in everything that they do until either someone else buys the team or by some miracle, Snyder proves that he can successfully and, most importantly, consistently run an NFL franchise. And trust me, I'm with you guys. I don't have any faith that that's going to happen anytime soon. But with Bruce gone, things are obviously going to improve, even if only slightly. Now, it was a mystery how someone that was so clearly bad at their job, and just look at his record as the Redskins team president, able to keep that job for 10 years. Awful record. The Redskins are on to greener pastures. And isn't it a little bit sad that we still have to keep the expectations tempered because of the owner? But stay with me, because I also noted the last time I was here that Ron Rivera felt like the best fit for the Redskins job. And most of us figured that Rivera would have some other options across the league and therefore would likely take those other options because the Redskins were such a dumpster fire. And at the time, they hadn't got rid of Bruce Allen just yet. But it didn't happen that way. And Rivera, I think, is the perfect guy to come in and help this franchise at least get back to competing in what is not a very good division in the NFC East, right? I mean, look at what Philadelphia did going 9-7, and they did have a banged-up team. I give them credit for even being as good as they were because of the amount of injuries that they had. But the NFC East is very much up for grabs right now. And with the Redskins, obviously there are a lot of holes personnel-wise on both sides of the ball, but from a culture standpoint, right, the culture that Bruce Allen only a couple of months ago said was damn good, it resulted in him being fired a couple of months later. Culture couldn't have been very good, could it? And there's the irony there, which we all saw coming, right? And it was pretty hilarious at the time when he did say that. But Rivera is the type of guy that comes in with a defensive mindset, right? One of the first things that he said he was going to do, no, not the ping pong table. Gosh, the ping pong table really stirred some people up around here. I can't even get on that topic right now. But one of the first things that he did was switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3 defense, which I think is only going to help guys like Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, Matt Ioannidis, and maybe, just maybe, if they use that number 2 overall pick to go get Chase Young, a guy like Chase Young out of Ohio State, who has declared for the NFL draft, but it's still a mystery as to what exactly the Redskins will do with that number 2 overall pick, because they do have some options, and I don't think it would be the worst decision at all to trade that pick, gather some more picks, and move back in the draft and try and fill some of the holes that you've got on both sides of the ball. Now, Rivera ends up coming to Washington, and he's also said to be a great guy to be around off the field, right? All of his players love him. And that's not really up for debate. I mean, Josh Norman, who's still here in Washington, D.C. with the Redskins, might not be at the start of 2020. But at any point, the Redskins and the Panthers have met up while Rivera was the head coach in Carolina. Norman always only had great things to say about Ron Rivera. You would see many of their, I don't know, embraces, I guess, before and after the games. And there was a lot of, you know, a lot of smiling going on. Obviously, there was an affinity for one another. And I think that's how Rivera is with most of his players. But the Redskins have actually given us an inkling of intrigue again. And listen, I'm not here to promise that it's going to end differently, the Rivera era. That would be a hollow promise. I missed the Redskins' last Super Bowl victory by about 2 years. So all I've known is a losing franchise. So to promise glory would just be stupid. And by the way, if you renounced your fandom for this team, I'm not trying to convince you to turn around, because I get it, right? If you left the Redskins and went to root for the Ravens, have fun. I don't care. That's not something I could do, but to each their own. There needs to be results, however, at some point. And that's why it was so ridiculous that Bruce Allen kept his job for 10 years, because there weren't results. There was a playoff berth here and there, right? Flash in the pan, if you will. So the Redskins do have a lot of holes to fill, a lot of personnel decisions to make, and many of them are going to be difficult decisions. But with that number 2 overall pick in the draft, some freedom on what exactly they decide to do with that pick. Not to mention, there is talent on this team, right? I mentioned Allen, Payne, Ioannidis, the defensive line. You got Landon Collins. You got some other talented defensive backs. The depth there isn't great. The jury is still out on Dwayne Haskins. Terry McLaurin's a stud. Cam Sims seems like a very reliable wide receiver. There's talent on this team. Now, what happens with Trent Williams going forward, right? I've seen a lot of people writing now about how the new Redskins regime, right, now that Rivera's there, shouldn't necessarily attach themselves to Trent Williams and the drama that's going on. And I just didn't see it that way, because I think that Trent just harbored the most ill will towards Bruce. And, you know, now that he's out of the building, it's going to be a completely different atmosphere for him. And therefore, he would go out there and, you know, not necessarily revert back to the old Trent Williams. He did take a year off of football, and that's great that he had the time to rest, but I got to imagine that there's some rust there. But I think he would be a great guy to have come back. And they also have to figure out what's going on with Brandon Scherff. Can you go get that guy? But I trust Rivera. We have no choice but to trust Rivera, right? Because you certainly can't trust Dan. So the fact that Rivera has much of the same power as Mike Shanahan did a few years back near the start of the RG3 debacle, it does concern some people. And I'm not telling you not to be concerned. But I think Rivera should at least at this point have your trust. And when he comes in and says that, I don't even remember exactly what the quote was from him about Dwayne Haskins, but essentially he wasn't ready to commit to Haskins long term. And I think that's fine because we're talking about a 3-13 football squad last season. They weren't good. They were horrible. And the fact that they actually won three games is a small miracle, right? So I think it's okay to look at changing anything. Again, there's plenty of talent, and you can build around that talent, but I think it's okay with how bad this team was to look at every possibility at every position. How can they get better? And Dwayne Haskins, I'm sure, is going to be there competing for the starting job next year. Who knows what's going to happen? I think Rivera is going to give him a fair chance, and I think the guy came in with a plan to help this team move forward. So coming up at 5:45, we're going to switch things up. We're going to move on to the Washington Capitals. Jordan Bondurant, Capitals reporter, our sister station 910 The Fan down there in Richmond, another Entercom station. He's going to join us. More NFL to get to here throughout. We're probably about to have another touchdown here in this Vikings-Niners game, but I will wait to give you that here in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. San Francisco has extended that lead. Niners now leading the Minnesota Vikings 14-7, just over 7 minutes to go in the second quarter. Niners just kicked the ball back to the Vikings, and Vikings are actually going to have some pretty good field position right here as Abdullah, the kick returner there for Minnesota, brings the ball back across Minnesota's own 40-yard line. But some good field position for Kirk Cousins as he trots back out onto the field to face the Niners defense once again. Second touchdown of the game for the Niners was from Tevin Coleman, a 1-yard rush on a 10-play, 53-yard drive. Did Tevin Coleman cap that bad boy with a 1-yard touchdown run? 5 minutes, 35 seconds. None of the touchdown drives so far in this game have been less than 4 minutes, and that's even considering the 41-yard touchdown pass that Kirk Cousins threw to Stephon Diggs. So what we're seeing is, from what I gather, and I'm, you know, watching between segments and whatnot, but a lot of balanced attack from both Minnesota and San Francisco, both teams moving the ball methodically down the field. I got to see what this game looks like after halftime, because we'll see how San Francisco holds against the Vikings offense here on this drive with now about 6.5 minutes to go. But San Francisco seems like the better team right now. The line closed at San Francisco -7, so they came in a touchdown favorite, but they're also leading the first down category 13-3 right now. 149-72 is the total yards comparison, but no turnovers yet. Who will force the game's first turnover? That could possibly go a really long way in deciding who ends up winning this football game. And I believe I heard Nick Costos, who was on with the Junkies yesterday morning, I believe he said this was the de facto NFC Championship game because he just felt like that both Seattle and Green Bay were such fraudulent teams that whoever wins that game tomorrow night, and that's the later of the two games that'll be on tomorrow, they just had no chance to beat whoever comes out of this divisional matchup between Minnesota and San Francisco. And he cited Green Bay being 13-3 and how really no one probably would have expected them to be 13-3 if you watched them play this season, if you watched a majority of their games. And I have to kind of agree with him, because the way that Green Bay went about winning those games, and you still do have to give Matt LaFleur, first-year head coach, a lot of credit, but the way that they were going and winning those contests, it wasn't a lot of Aaron Rodgers. It was a lot of defense. Now, we'll see, because tomorrow at Lambeau Field, they are expecting some snow, and it's going to come in both the morning. I think it might actually be starting tonight, and there's also a chance of snow that could be starting right around the time that game kicks off, which is at 6:40. So we got a lot of NFL football going on. Just got done talking a little Washington Nationals. A little bit later in the show, too, we're going to talk to my pal Dwight Vick, a former All-Big East offensive lineman, and We'll do some NFL. We'll talk about the playoffs, but we'll also talk about the national championship that you have coming up on Monday night. And I'll first start by saying college football and college basketball really got to do something about those Monday night national championship games. I frankly don't understand. I mean, to a certain degree, I understand why they don't put it on a Saturday night or even on Sunday, because they don't want to go up against the NFL playoffs. But I think you got to figure something else out, man. I mean, put it on a Thursday night or a Friday night or something, because nobody wants to watch these games kick off at almost 9 o'clock on a Monday. It's just, it's really tough to get up the next day. It's only Tuesday, so it's not like you're really looking forward to the weekend at that point. I'd really love to see them move that game to either Thursday or Friday night. I just think that they've got to switch that up. I think they'd get more viewers. I think it would be easier to get people to come out to the games. It just seems like the smart thing to do. And I think we have a really, really good matchup this year between the Tigers and the Tigers, LSU and Clemson. And it's a matchup of two very colorful head coaches between Ed Orgeron of Louisiana State and Dabo Swinney of Clemson. And both guys are kind of crazy in their own right, because you have Ed O, who there are all these stories coming out about, not bad ones, nothing about breaking the law or anything like that, but, you know, ordering pounds and pounds of crawfish at a restaurant where they don't even serve crawfish, or the quote where he said, "The day that I can't get out of bed and kick some dude's arse is the day that I don't get out of bed," or something, whatever the quote was, right? Ed O has captivated the state of Louisiana, and he has that team playing as really well as I've seen. I mean, even going back to the national championship that they've won with Nick Saban, the defense isn't at the level that we're used to seeing an LSU team play at, but their offense is on another level. And the season that Joe Burrow is having, it really makes me feel like, and this is very much a cliche term, but it feels like they're a team of destiny. And you kind of get the feeling about teams like that early on in the postseason. And boy, did they dismantle Oklahoma in the college football playoff game a couple of weekends ago. That was actually the last time I was here in studio hanging out with you guys. LSU just, I mean, poleaxed the Oklahoma Sooners. And Lincoln Riley and the Oklahoma football program, obviously, they've yet to win a college football playoff game despite having been there now a handful of times. Just, I don't see this season ending any way, or there's any way that it ends differently for Joe Burrow than in a victory, just because of how good they have been. Now, I saw that LSU with six wins against AP top 10 teams is the most that any team in college football history has done. But Clemson is likely going to be the best team that they've played all year. That's saying something, because LSU has, you know, met the likes of Alabama. Obviously, they beat Oklahoma in the first round of the college football playoff. But this Clemson team now has that championship pedigree. A few years ago, 2016, after they beat Virginia Tech in the ACC championship, moved on to the college football playoff. It was their second appearance. They went and they stood toe-to-toe with Alabama after getting their hearts broken the year before, and they were still in that underdog role, right? They still hadn't got that first national championship. They were still kind of trying to become one of the blue blood programs, right? And maybe you wouldn't consider Clemson a blue blood program, but clearly with the dominance that they've established now, they are one of the premier programs in college football, and there's no denying that. Well, now most of the guys on that roster have not only experienced multiple college football playoff games, multiple national championship games, but they haven't lost in over 2 years. And despite losing as much talent on the defensive side of the ball as they lost last year, they just reload again, man. They've got a... If you look at the statistics, their defensive unit has actually been better this year than last year's. And that was a defensive line where you had four guys that moved on to the NFL, a couple of which went in the first round. So I think the key matchup there is going to be LSU's offense versus Clemson's defense. Clemson's offense is also incredibly explosive, and maybe that's even the better matchup to look at, because with the way Trevor Lawrence can win with both his arm and his legs, and he doesn't necessarily look like the type of guy that can get it done with his legs just because he's so tall and kind of lanky, but he can get it done with his legs. We saw him do that. We saw how tough he can be, too, by the way, with some of the shots that he's taken. And Travis Etienne, Clemson's running back, may just be the most explosive player in college football and a likely first-round draft pick. Maybe not a top-10 draft pick, could be, but certainly will go and play at the next level. All things considered, I'm really looking forward to this, not just because it's not Clemson and Alabama, right? A matchup that we've now seen three times over the last 4 years, with the exception being Georgia and Alabama. It's not just because of that. It's not just because it's the Tigers versus the Tigers. It's not Dabo. No, I just think that these are the two best teams remaining. And I give Clemson credit, too, because I picked Ohio State to beat them in the first round of the college football playoff. We just got done talking about the talent that Clemson has on both sides of the ball. Ohio State, they're going to have a bunch of guys go in the NFL draft this year, Chase Young being at the top of that list. And they were incredibly explosive, but Clemson, Brent Venables, their defensive coordinator, they devised a great game plan to try and then succeed to slow down the Ohio State offense led by Justin Fields. So an incredible job there. The national championship is going to be a lot of fun. We just hope that they move it from a Monday night at some point. I know the junkies can't be happy about that, right? I mean, those are the guys that got to wake up 3:30, 4, depending on how quick it takes them to get in. I don't know. I used to do the morning shift too, however, and I used to have to get here at 4:30 every morning. And it was, when you wake up that early, you don't get to live a normal life. I mean, let's be honest. Most people in the world aren't waking up that early and going to bed as early as you need to go if you want to be well-rested in the morning. I know Darius knows what I'm talking about. I saw you on the Junkies a couple of weeks ago during the holidays, man, becoming a big silly over there.
I am not a – it's funny because I'm not a morning person at all.
Really?
So it's
so that was tough, I bet.
Yeah, it's tough. But, wow. But I mean, it's always a pleasure and an honor working with the Junkies.
Oh, of course.
So I won't complain.
And they're legends. Just curious, by the way, what time did you have to get here?
So I have to be here by 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, okay.
Yeah, for that shift.
All right, well
– yeah.
All the sacrifices that we make to do this job, right? And of course, it's worth it for all of us, as Darius said, and I'm sure it was an honor to work with those guys, the Junkies. I've had the chance to meet them. Fantastic stuff. But let's get that national championship on a more desirable night, Thursday or Friday. I'm putting in an official complaint with the NCAA. Not that they'll read it, because the NCAA really doesn't do anything right. Anyway, we got Jordan Bondurant, our Capitals reporter from 910 The Fan, our sister station down in Richmond, slated to join us next. We're talking some Caps as they get ready to host the New Jersey Devils. Pre-game coverage starts in a little over an hour, 6:45, with the voice of the Capitals, John Walton. Stick with us on 106.7 The Fan. So we're keeping an eye on this game between the San Francisco 49ers, the Minnesota Vikings, NFC divisional playoff matchup. 44 seconds to go, second quarter. Vikings are driving. They just put a graphic up on the TV. Kirk Cousins threw a 41-yard touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs. They have 19 other plays for which they have gained 47 yards. So it has not been a particularly efficient day for the Vikings offense. But I mentioned coming into the last segment that Minnesota actually had some good field position with the kick return going past their own 40-yard line, and they did, and that obviously helped them now move into what's going to be field goal range for the Vikings, as Kirk Cousins just got sacked on third down, and now Minnesota will try to make it a 14-10 game with 36 seconds to go in the second quarter. Still 14-7 officially. We'll see if Minnesota can knock the field goal through. Hello, everybody. 106.7 The Fan, your AM/FM dial, the radio.com app, on the stream at thefandc.com. I'm Danny Noakes. Darius producing the show. Our Capitals reporter, Jordan Bondurant of 910 The Fan down in Richmond, is not going to join us this segment. We're going to bump him about 30 minutes from now, and there's a good reason for it. The man is just trying to get to work. He's actually on the Metro right now. He's making his way over to Capital One Arena, where the Capitals are getting ready to take on the New Jersey Devils tonight. And we will have, by the way, your pregame coverage starting at 6:45 with the voice of the Capitals, Mr. John Walton, the rest of the Caps radio crew. They will be there for that as well. And that is when we are with you up until. So now under an hour to go, about 58 minutes, and this is your chance to get in on the conversation. 800-636-1067. That's the Mattress Warehouse hotline. You can also tweet me, at Danny Noakes. You can tweet the station, at 1067TheFan. Before we jump back into a little Redskins discussion, because I have some beef that I want to get out with some people out there. No one around here, don't worry. I'll get to it in a second. But Minnesota did knock that field goal through. 39-yarder from Dan Bailey. And it is 14-10. Niners still with the lead. You'd imagine that they're going to take a knee and be content with a 14-10 halftime lead in this NFC divisional matchup. But on the topic of the Redskins, fans and radio hosts down in Charlotte, North Carolina, I've been gathering this over the last couple of weeks. They're laughing at Redskins fans' expectations going into this season and beyond. Of course, it stems from Ron Rivera coming to D.C. after he was fired by Carolina. And I'll preface this again by saying I actually personally know two hosts down at WFNZ, which is the flagship home of the Panthers, and they're also a sister station of ours here at Entercom. But I see this on Twitter, so obviously take it with a pound, not a grain, a pound of salt, because people say things on social media that they would never say to your face. But they think, fans in Carolina and hosts, that it's hilarious the Redskins fans have expectations for Rivera to lead this franchise to the playoffs and possibly a playoff win in his first 3 to 4 years. Not just his first year, but that first 3 to 4 years, that opening window that he's going to have a chance to win some football games. So we're talking about fans here, right? And when you do local radio, you become a voice of the fans to a certain degree. So I don't expect those folks down there in Charlotte to necessarily have great perspective on this situation, because clearly they don't understand the dynamic of the Redskins here in Washington, D.C. The image of this franchise is incredibly tarnished. We know that, right? Especially relative to where it used to be. That's very obvious. But there are a few things here that I want to point out. And the Redskins have sunk pretty darn low over Snyder's tenure, but they've never bottomed out like the Browns have, or the Lions, or the Bills. I mean, look at Cleveland this year, by the way, who I said was not going to make the playoffs from the time the training camp started. They had all the talent in the world to be a playoff team. But because they couldn't put it together, they didn't have the right guys at the top of the organization, there was no way that they were going to make the playoffs. And you could also put some of that on Baker Mayfield and the offense kind of falling apart, what have you. But those are just three franchises, three examples of teams that have obviously suffered far more than the Redskins have as of late. Not just over the last 30 years, but over forever, right? So we're not talking about decades-long playoff droughts with the Redskins. They find a way to back into the playoffs every few years. It's been 15 years since the last playoff win. Yeah, it's a significant period without a win. But at least they get there from time to time, right? And no, I'm not saying that you should be proud of that. But bear with me, because if you're a Carolina fan, first of all, the Redskins beat the Panthers in 2019, resulting in Rivera being fired. So I'm not quite sure where this holier-than-thou attitude comes from. The other thing here is that most NFL fans don't understand how expectations are created and how they're sustained. All right, we're coming up on 30 years since the Redskins' last Super Bowl win. It's a long time. But there's still three Lombardi trophies over at Redskins Park. And to anyone that mocks the fact that the Redskins haven't won a Super Bowl over a long period of time, my answer is always, and? You think because time passes, history fades? Of course not. The Super Bowl's happened. It doesn't matter how far in the past they are, unless you're the defending Super Bowl champions. And even then, your win is always, always, always a piece of history. And just a piece of the past. It'll always be fleeting, because there's another season right around the corner. So what the success of the Redskins franchise in the 80s and early 90s did was create expectations. Expectations that are not going to fade. The only way they could fade is if Bruce Allen was here for another 10, maybe even 20 years. All right? They never went away. And some fans have bailed. And I've said it a million times, and I'll continue to say it. I don't blame you. I'm not going to tell you to stick around. But most of them are still here. Just because they're not showing up to the games doesn't mean they don't care. Listen to this station on a daily basis, a weekly basis. People still care. Sometimes they might care about some things that are pretty trivial, kind of dumb, like the ping pong table, but at least they do still care. And someday, when the Redskins do return to ultimate glory and win another Super Bowl, something that may not even happen in my lifetime, that run will easily surpass the hype that we all just experienced behind the championship runs of the Caps and the Nats. Football's king. It always will be. You don't believe me? Everyone just did their list of the top moments in DC sports history for the last decade. And most of the ones, the twos, the threes, those moments in those lists, they were the Caps and Nats moments. And they should have been. But right up there were moments from the 2012 season. The Redskins season that featured Robert Griffin III and him winning Rookie of the Year. And the Redskins winning the division. And then going to the playoffs and losing to the Seattle Seahawks, a first-round exit. I'm not saying that 2012 was better than either run that the Caps and the Nats made to win their championships. Not at all. Not even close. But it makes the same lists that the runs that both the Caps and the Nats put on were able to do. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when they do find a way to get back to the Super Bowl? And again, might not happen. Might not happen in my lifetime. I'm not saying it's going to happen under Rivera. I'm not putting a timeline on when it will happen. But the point is, the expectations that were established for this franchise after the three Super Bowl wins are not likely to fade anytime soon. 800-636-1067. Coming up in the, well, it's the second hour of the show, but technically it's the third hour that we've been on the air because we've been with you since about 4:30. But up next, Dwight Vick, former All Big East offensive lineman, is going to chop up a little NFL playoffs with us. We'll also look ahead to the national championship in college football coming up on Monday between number one LSU and number three Clemson. It's going to be a riot, not to mention 6:15. We'll get our guy, our Capitals reporter, Jordan Bonner, on to give us a preview of the Caps game against the Devils tonight. With you up until 6:45, you're listening to 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.